NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
And that's 1-800-BYDESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, joined by Tom Timmerman and Jim Thomas. We're all here in the STL. And, well, JT, and I think we pretty much owe this one to Tom, but we're going to start off with a positive note. And that is, since our last visit, Robert Portuzo on the board.
Yeah. I think he responded to some good-natured ribbing from Tommy Timmerman. 17 goals in 10 years. And as Tom says, he can remember each and every one. It's not a big volume of goals, but boy, since he's came back in the lineup, we've seen him at his best. He's been physical, which Berube loves. And even before the two fights, remember it was one of the wins over Colorado. Very early in the game. It was a game where the Blues fell behind 2-0. And he just cleaned out Gabriel Landeskog's sinuses with a hit to the face over by the bench. And Bortuzzo was penalized, but boy, the Avalanche, they were kind of looking over their shoulder every time Bortuzzo was in the area. So good to see that the Blues need, more of that. Klim Kostin makes it in time to play any regular season or postseason games, they'll get even more of that. But it was good to see from Bortuzzo, and he's one of the even in his Zoom era, he's one of the fun guys to talk to.
Yeah, there's only a few people that I would bring up scoring droughts with, and Bortuzzo is one of them because he's good about that kind of stuff. He realizes it. And then he makes fun of it and has a good time with it. So it's good. But yeah, it's amazing he doesn't have more goals. I mean, he's got actually, you know, good instinct. Good. It just doesn't happen for him. But he's a guy that, you know, I've said this before, could, you know, is actually a good goal scorer. It just doesn't happen.
He almost had another one last night.
Yeah.
I like too how he took a little shot at John Kelly. I guess a couple of years ago when he scored, Kelly reminded everyone it was like a 300 game goal drought for Bortuzzo or whatever it was. So
yeah, he may see the video more than he reads the paper, because I certainly have mentioned Robert's challenges in print. But he must not be a subscriber.
Well, we'll have to get him now that we're all on board with Bortuzzo. We'll have to get him to read more often. You know, and on but seriously, as you look to a matchup against a physical team, you know, you're gonna need all of this. Now, you mentioned, you know, Roberts kind of worked his way back into good graces. Sammy Blais in and out of the lineup, he's got to be healthy. But he's a guy that can certainly throw his body around. I don't know if Kostin will be a factor or not, but he certainly fits the profile. They got into some physical play with Minnesota because you have no choice. And, you know, I guess JT, you think they can get ready for the heavy work ahead against the Golden Knights? Because besides Ryan Reeves, they had a bunch of guys that will certainly lay the lumber.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, obviously Braden Schenn, he will hit people, but Vegas is a huge challenge, obviously, and they do a lot of things well. I'm very curious though. It was, I believe, last week in this very spot at the net front where you said your preferred matchup was Vegas over Colorado, right? So,
Again, I got confidence in Bortuzzo for one. He's listening. We don't want him on our bad side. You know, yeah. I mean, I think this team, theoretically, I don't know, Tom, I know they're physical and for sure, and that they're going to have to answer that bell. But, you know, I just compare that to the explosiveness of Colorado and wonder if the Blues aren't better suited to face Vegas.
You know, the last time they played them, they looked like a good match for them. There are a lot of games before that in which Vegas seemed to bring out the worst in the Blues. So, you know, the last two games notwithstanding, the Blues look like they're more in their game. And so maybe more likely to see a game like that 3-1 win they had over Vegas the last time they met. But Vegas has at times made the Blues look pretty bad, but it's the playoffs.
Well, JT, speaking of the last two games, our Heroes had a tough stretch against the Lanch and the Wild. I mean, certainly they were able to elevate their play from where it was facing those two very good teams. I guess a letdown was somewhat inevitable against the Duck. There's nothing special about that team just playing out the string with a fair number of young players still trying to find their way. But you know, I guess when you see the Chief talk about, you know, loss of energy and you know, the guys wondering a bit about, you know, the intensity of the last two games, a little bit of a concern. And I guess just in time going to face a really big challenge this weekend.
Yeah, we just haven't seen the Blues have long stretches of sustained good play. They did it last year. Last year they had, I believe, 8-game win streak, 7-game win streak, you know, a couple times. And obviously in the cup year, they had that franchise record 11-game win streak. They just can't seem to sustain things, but I'm not too tore up over what happened against Anaheim. I actually was in some ways encouraged by Monday. A lot of people saying, boy, what a strange game this looked like. It was strange because the Blues didn't have their A game yet. They managed to win the game kind of workmanlike, businesslike, which they haven't done. They haven't done that. You know, I thought we'd see a little more last night because at least the possibility, now they wouldn't have clinched anyway because Arizona lost, but still I expected a little more juice last night. But yeah, it's they still, you get, you know, the Anaheim, as Mike Hoffman pointed out, is an NHL team. You got 3 out of 4 points, but I expected a little more juice against the Ducks last night. That's for sure.
Yeah, Blues have played the Ducks 4 times at Enterprise Center in the last 6 weeks, and they've only won one of those 4 games. You know, they did get 4 points because of overtime losses, but you know, it's what I guess is what's good. It's going to make these Vegas games good for them. It's the best of all worlds for the Blues. They're against a good team and they're on the road, and that's when the Blues seem to be at their best. So this could be good for them, and they don't have to play Vegas again. And they it's a team that the Blues team thrives on emotion, and they need to be able to bring that every night to play with that energy. And obviously, when you get into playoff series, it's easy to find because you're playing the same team, and we all know the drill there. So, you know, the lacks of energy, you know, shouldn't be as steep. But they're still having periods. You know, it used to be routinely the second period, but now sometimes it's the first, sometimes it's the third, where they're just not showing up with the vim and vigor that they need.
And speaking of not showing up, JT, in and out of the lineup, the mystery that is number 91, the net front, a familiar topic, Vladimir Tarasenko in the net front. Vladimir is a bit of an enigma coming back from the injury. And, you know, I don't know, at this point, so close to the playoffs, with all the struggles to get him going, finding the spot for him, again, in and out, kind of wonder, you know, and, you know, it been a familiar topic in the Post-Dispatch as well. Where's 91 and where's he going to be in the playoffs?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was interesting before, it was, announced that he had this lower body injury. It just seemed to be playing better without him. And you go back to last season and, you know, they missed him for 61 games. They had no problems, you know, over the long run scoring goals. Again, it was their highest scoring team since 94-95 last year without Vladimir Tarasenko for 61 games. Then he comes back, and again, Doug Armstrong, when he did that just the beginning of March, kind of state of the team Zoom call, he said it's he's been out so long that in a way it's a different team. There are a lot of new players than when he played his last full season in the Stanley Cup year, and so it will be an adjustment. And I guess you can say the adjustment just hasn't been there. I mean, he had no shot attempts, not no shot on goals. He had no shot attempts in his last game and that he played, and it was fitting because you just didn't notice him on the ice. So yeah, what do you do when you're healthy? Who goes out of the lineup? I know I can hear the chorus already, Zach Sanford, but it is a puzzle, not just for the immediate future, but you know, kind of long term, with an off season looming, an expansion draft, and Tom and I have both been on the same page on this though for a long time. That I think we both thought that this season we weren't going to see vintage Vladdy, just because he had missed so much time. Again, four games in a year and a half, but now party has to wonder, will we ever see a vintage Vladdy?
You know, fittingly, Winston Churchill said of Russia, that Russia is a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. and that pretty much speaks to the Tarasenko situation, I think, is the when you have a guy that first Anaheim game, he was just, a non-factor out there. I mean, he played whatever it was, 15 minutes, and, he was barely noticed. Seemed like he didn't even touch the puck all that much. So, so right now, obviously, because he's not in the lineup because he's hurt, something is going on. And the question is going to be it obviously really affected his game on Monday night. When they get him back, is there any lingering effects of that going forward? There's always going to be the temptation and the tendency to play him, because when he finds his game, it's a really good game, and that will help the team. And, you'd rather have Vladimir Tarasenko find his game than have Zach Sanford find his game, or have Mackenzie McEachern find his game, because the upside of it is much bigger if Tarasenko gets his game. So they're going to give him a lot of leeway. They're going to cut him a lot of slack, and he's going to have to prove that he can't help the team, or that whatever the injury is too severe. So I think he's going to get the ice time as long as it looks as though he can do something out there.
One reason why the group, certainly sputtered offensively, couldn't get in sync the last couple of games, just out of rhythm. The puck moving D-men are super important in today's game, with as much pressure as teams apply on their forecheck and the way everybody is will press and take away lanes. So you're missing Torrey Krug, which is a big deal. I think all signs are that he'll be able to play soon, I guess. And also Vince Dunn's been missing in action, missed some time. That makes it tough. I mean, you want to have more size on your blue line. I mean, that's a cliche, but I think it's fair to say going into the Vegas series, that's what you would want. But you also need the puck moving, and JT, it's been missed, especially Krug, who has played some pretty good hockey here. He is what he is. He's a little guy, but he's been, until he went out, he was playing some pretty good hockey.
Yeah, he was. But, his best hockey of the year, he'd had, I think, like 10 assists in his last 10 games. It was noticeable last night. One of the things, when I ask Berube, and we all like Nico Mikkola, I think this latest batch of games he's played, he's been more of a physical presence. He got into a fight last night, which I didn't know, was part of his game. So he's and he's had quite a few scrums, it seems like, recently by the net. So he's aggravating some people. But one of the things that Berube said about him was that he needed to work on his passing and his puck management. And we saw that last night. He had some real troubles passing back in his own end, some stuff that was intercepted by the Ducks. And so he is it decision-making or whatever? Obviously the game's moving very fast. So anyway, that showed up in that game, but you're absolutely right, Jeff, both Dunn and Krug. And I thought Dunn was playing better defensively and better moving the puck. It seems like Vince Dunn gets in trouble when he just kind of waits and
decides what to do back in his own end. That's when the miscues happen, but it seemed like he was consciously trying to get the puck out quicker. So it'll help definitely to have those two guys back. And I think it's short term for both of those guys. They were on the ice for the morning skate and stayed, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes late doing cardio work. So we didn't ask Berube about Dunn status yesterday, but he said he thought by the end of the week he would be back in the lineup, and he's indicated that Krug was a very short-term thing too. So I would think that, you know, maybe by Vegas, the back-to-back here, we'll see one or both back, and I think that'll be good. But I think what we've shown, what we've seen here too, every time Wallman and Mikula get chances to play, even though Mikula, again, had some missteps, I think it bodes well for their future. I think both of those guys can be pretty good players moving forward.
Yeah, we can't rule out, you know, the number of assists. Krug has only scored one goal. He matched Bortuzzo in that total. But his assist totals have been really impressive. He's been setting up plays really well. I mean, Wallman and Mikula are still young, and the future is bright for them. You know, how do you feel about going to the playoffs with two guys who have, you know, less than a full season of experience there, going up against some of these teams they're going to go up against? And as it is, you know, you got to spread them out. You got to have one on each pairing, the second and third pairing. So the Blues need Dunn and Krug back. There's no question about that.
When I look at Nico's issue, it kind of reminds me a bit of a poor version of Joel Edmondson. One reason why, when you looked at when the team decided not to pay Joel and ultimately to move on from Joel, is if you looked at, he just had a lot of, I mean, for as enthusiastic as he was with his, could be physical, he certainly had some ability to jump into play. You know, the whole giveaway takeaway ratio was never very good for Joel. And it's sort of held him back, but maybe Montreal, now he's playing 20 minutes a night. It's coming together for Joel. But, you know, I think with Nico, it's, you know, it's a tough case. And then you throw in the fact that here's a guy coming from the European scene, bigger rink, certainly a different look. I don't think you run into sort of an intense forechecking either in Europe or in the AHL that you see. The NHL rink is so small with the forechecking. It's small anyways compared to the international rink, but it is really small. JT, the rink is really small for defensemen in today's NHL, the way that teams close on these guys.
Yeah, and you know, he played, what was it, just last year in San Antonio, but or maybe he's played a couple of years to adjust, Mikula. But, yeah, he played 2-3 years. I mean, you know, he's 25 years old. It's not like he's a, you know, 22-year-old rookie coming into the league. He's 25 years old, so he played some time over there in Finland. But again, I think it's something he can work on, and it's not like it always crops up. But you know, Berube sooner or later usually is pretty good about telling us what needs to be done with the player, and I'm sure it's nothing he and his staff haven't discussed many times with the individual players. And so, yeah, you know, that's definitely something long-term that Mikula needs to work on. But you know, we all know what we like. He has that long reach. You know, he can probably gain a little more weight and strength, but he looks like that. We used to call him the cookie cutters, you know, when they had Edmondson and Petro and Bo Meester, all those guys, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 215, 225. That pairing with Parayko, you know, you can see, okay, that we're not going to say he's Bo Meester, but you can see some potential in that going, you know, moving forward.
Now, this small ring talk though applies to one of the questions du jour of Klim Kostin, who, as he comes over and moves from the bigger European rink back here, where he's going to find he doesn't have the time, he doesn't have the space that he had, and how quickly can he make that transition of playing the North American game? I mean, he's going to be asked to do it, you know, in the playoffs, essentially, to get up to speed on that. So that's, I think, going to be, you know, something to consider, is how quickly can Kostin do that?
Yeah, and speaking of Klim and the general topic of the bigger, potentially more physical wingers, the battles will be a huge part of the playoffs, the puck battles, the wall battles, the battles in front of the net. So you have, you know, it's, you got, you talk about, you know, Zach, this become a bit of a whipping boy here. He obviously needs to engage. He's drifted. Sammy, we all love Sammy, in and out of the lineup with injuries, trying to find his place. Kostin, irritable and big, you know, maybe next year, hard to imagine as much this year. But Kyle Clifford is a guy, obviously, great playoff pedigree. He's a guy who's been in and out a bit with this group. But, you know, I think he still skates well enough. And, you know, as he's proven again, he's got a nose for the net. And I can see Kyle Clifford playing, you know, getting into games where he would even play and maybe even play third line minutes as the Chief tries to get his team in a position to compete with the Golden Knights.
Yeah, and I'd like to see more physicality from Clifford. I expected more on that front from him. He surprised me with his skating ability, and he's not without, you know, devoid of offensive skill. But I thought we'd see him banging around a little bit more. Now, you know, he got in several fights early. I think he's got four fights for the season, but just didn't see kind of the consistent physical play. So if he can bring that, I mean, he certainly was a revelation last night. I mean, I guess, you know, sitting out for a couple, three games as a healthy scratch is a great form of motivation. Look what it's apparently done for Mike Hoffman. But yeah, that's a good point, Jeff, that he, you know, especially with the teams that the Blues are going to have to face and get by if they want to get out of this division, they need more of that from Clifford.
You know, the Blues seem to do well with guys that step into the lineup who weren't supposed to be there, but get in because of injuries. Somehow those guys seem to have the right touch. You know, Hoffman only got in because of Thomas getting hurt. Clifford was only in because either Tarasenko or Blais were not in the lineup yesterday. So that's something that's, you know, it's not a situation you like to be in, but it's one that Blues guys seem to have managed to maximize. So as much as you'd like to settle in on a lineup, the new blood helps. And you're going to get a look at it, assuming the Blues, you know, secure this playoff spot sometime in the next few days. They'll have some time to give some guys a rest over the last week, that last half week of the season. Hopefully for their sake, they would like to have it clinched by then, so that they can give guys some days off.
When you look at, you know, what happened last night, I think it's another tribute to, you know, one, hockey players and hockey teams, you know, they get it for the most part. And David Backes, who's had a heck of a career and served this franchise well for many, many years before deciding that he needed that extra contract year. So he packed up and moved to Boston. You know, at the end, it was pretty cool to see the response of the team and also David, knowing that this is, you know, in all likelihood, the swan song. JT, I mean, it's in hockey, you know, I don't know that we see this as much in other sports. You've covered all the sports. You know, hockey's unique, and the fact that the guys got it, even a lot of the guys who didn't play with Backes, most of the guys didn't, but they get it, and it was nice to see what they did.
It was fantastic, and stick taps for Anaheim. I mean, this sounds like this came together pretty quickly. Obviously, maybe it doesn't happen if Anaheim's fighting for a playoff berth, but he wasn't even on the active roster coming into St. Louis, and they make this happen. Ryan Getzlaf, the captain of the Ducks, was doing some lobbying. I mean, maybe not quite Rudy, you know, throwing his jersey on Dallas Eakin's desk, you know, to, hey, give him my spot in the lineup. But yeah, they had to create a lineup spot, a roster spot for him. And then, boy, one of the things the Blues do best is, you know, when one of their own comes back, one of their former heroes come back, man, do they do it right with the video tribute and everything. And again, you know, a tough point loss for the Blues last night, and yet they still, you know, line up and pay their respects to Backes. It's one thing I've come to see in hockey, just all these hockey traditions are just, they're just fantastic. Like the, you know, the, taking a, if you're a rookie playing in your first game, just you take the first lap out there before the game, all this kind of stuff about the game of hockey, just been fascinating for me.
And Backes was a very essential figure in this, in that team's history, as far as, you know, as they emerged from the murk of that, of where that team was, and came back under Ken Hitchcock to be a contender in the Western Conference, and Backes was essential. And then Backes, you know, the, even after he left, I mean, you know, Alex Pietrangelo was Backes's protege as captain, and so his kind of the legacy carried on there. So I mean, Backes meant a lot. He's a guy that, you know, had he stayed, could have been pushing franchise records in a lot of categories. And he was just a swell guy, and he was accommodating, and he was a great leader and wise, and he once brought a pig to practice. So that was many contributions of David Backes.
A tribute to Buffalo Head, as yes, was it Petro that told him to settle down, mm-hmm, Buffalo Head?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you gotta, JT, you gotta love hockey players. You gotta love them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And this big, strong, you know, this tough guy, as you remember back, it's just both during the video tribute and after the game, he was the number one star, got interviewed by Pang, and several fans stayed to listen to it. Just this big, tough guy, just trying to maintain his emotions, fight back the tears. It was very, very heartwarming to see. And best of luck to Backes, who obviously I never covered, but the boy, you guys, everybody, the veteran scribes just speak so highly of the guy.
And you got to love how fate works, that the last two games, or the last two series, as it, now we can say, of the Anaheim season are at St. Louis and then at Minnesota. I mean, the two places. I mean, if David Backes had gone to the league office and said, draw up this schedule this way so I can finish in these two cities, that's what you would have done. And I doubt that happened, but it's working out perfectly for Backes's farewell to the NHL.
Okay, last topic on the net front. Also looking at a former Blues, huge figure in the Blues development and coming out of the morass that was where this franchise was. You know, guys, I hate to see what happened to JD in New York, John Davidson. You got a goofy owner with there that makes you appreciate Tom Stillman all the more. James Dolan issues this statement demanding the firing of the enforcement czar, Paros, because Tom Wilson, against all odds, might have stepped over the line again. you know, JT, I mean, it does, what a bizarre set of circumstances. And you see the owner blow up, issue a stupid statement, and end up firing the president and the general manager all in like a 24-hour swoop. It kind of makes you, you know, and you've covered some goofy franchises, JT, you know, one in particular. So I guess it's another reminder that it's a little refreshing to have a normalcy at the top of a franchise.
Yeah. And what a night that was with the Capitals, with everything going on. You have a situation with the front office, you have like 27 fights. And then you have the heartwarming, you know, TJ Oshie scoring the hat trick after his father, the coach, passes. But so the timing of the Davidson and GM firing, Gorton firing, puzzled me, though. I mean, so this had nothing to do with like ripping the league and demand. I mean, if they were going to fire him, couldn't they have waited a week till the end of the season? I mean, seemed a little peculiar.
That's one of the things that makes the Rangers so endearing. Yeah, I mean, you know, JD did, you know, brought a lot here. Again, he became the face and voice of the franchise when the team was not doing well, and you know, kind of charted that path out. This could well be the last stop for JD. He's 68 years old. What does, you know, certainly has earned a retirement, or and certainly can go into the media back again, because that's where he got started, and do that all over again. He would be in demand there. As someone who knows the league inside and out, and can convey that information very well.
And JT, how do you think the last day or two has been in Gary Bettman's office? Here he is, you know, the New York, the main New York franchise, you know, one of the, you know, just a, you know, one of your brand names, and it's just the whole thing, the fighting, you know, the stupidity of a line brawl, which he really frowns upon these days, the attacking of the integrity of the player safety department, and, you know, just, and then just the theatrical dismissal of the well-respected team president as well as the GM. I mean, they made it Bettman. And but what can he do with Dolan? Dolan's just goofy. And, you know, he owns the arena, owns the basketball team, he owns the hockey team. He just must be squirming.
I probably wasn't taking any calls, you know. I'm out of the office. And the whole just Tom Wilson thing. I don't know. I mean, you know, there were so many people fighting. I was waiting for like Oscar Sundquist to come out of the stands with his with his crutches from his knee surgery. Yeah, remember that preseason game? You know, and hitting Tom Wilson over the head. But player safety quotes, air quotes.
You know, the league must have really, really been strongly behind not suspending Wilson and thinking that he did nothing. Because if they had suspended him for four games for the rest of the regular season, everyone would have said, okay, the penalty's a little light, but okay. And they'd have gone on with their lives. Any kind of penalty, but to say nothing at all, that was, you know, if you suspend the guy, people in Washington complain. But by not sending him, everybody else, 99% of the league, goes nuts about it, especially the New York Rangers, who are going to play him the next day. I mean, it's like, you know, there was no way that move was not going to not play out well. It was going to be a disaster. So, I mean, the league must have really, really felt strongly that Department of Player Safety, nope, there's nothing wrong there. Because it was just so many moves they could have made that would have alleviated all that, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, and JT, all you had to do is look at the schedule and say, well, we got to give them something because otherwise it's not going to be good. The next game is going to be bad.
And yeah, just suspend them for the Rangers game. Then you avoid all that, you know, just even one game and people would have yelled. But, I mean, I'm getting emails about petitions about Tom Wilson. I mean, and I signed it, but no. But, yeah, it's just not the, and this isn't the first time, obviously, we're all wondering, what are they thinking over there at NHL headquarters?
This goes back to Mark Stone and Tyler Bozak, the beginning of the season for Blues fans. How do you not do something for that?
Yeah.
Well, I do think my final note on this edition of Net Front Presence, maybe they need to find a finesse player in that role. I think you keep putting tough guys in that role of guiding player safety. They look at things a little differently. I mean, put somebody that has lived in Pavel Buchnevich's skates, you know, or Artemi Panarin, who got ragdolled, you know, got grabbed by the hair and tossed like a small child by a grizzly bear. You know, you maybe need to, you know, for the lack of a better word, put a pansy in that position. And maybe
you get a Lady Bing winner to be in that.
Yeah, spot. Well, I mean, not that all Lady Bing winners are pansies, because we wouldn't want to put that on anybody. But you know, all of a sudden I'm like it's the 1980s again, JT. Watching this stuff.
This is some high quality brainstorming we're doing here. That's why at the net front, you not only get the analysis, we offer potential solutions. Lady Bing winner. That's right. Somebody's got to be available.
All right, well, we'll see with that's Pierre Turgeon on line two. All right, for Jim Thomas, for Tom Timmerman, this is Jeff Gordon. This has been the Net Front Presence. A reminder that all of our podcasts are available on our website. You can find we put them in our stories, we put them on our pages. You can find them also on your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us if they haven't heard. Until next time, and we'll be ready for the playoffs, I do believe. For Jim Thomas, for Tom Timmerman, I'm Jeff. See ya!